journey through time and space.
To the world of the mighty Loosh.
Julian Barrett, Noel Fielding, hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, Danny.
Hello. Are you happy that the CD is being released?
Yeah,
very
happy.
Curious.
Curious.
Are you?
Curiously happy. There we are, actually, yeah, we always wanted it. I haven't got a copy of it as well, so that would be great.
Do you remember everything that's on it?
I don't remember anything that's on it.
Yeah. We were in a cave recording it for so long.
We listened to it once, didn't we, and then smashed up the computer. The mighty blue.
Well, how did you two meet?
The actual way it worked was I was doing a gig and you come to see me do a gig, and then someone like didn't turn up, or someone, they had the bills at one person short, so I said, why don't you go on and fill in that spot, because I knew he did stand up but I'd never seen Noel do it. So he said, yeah, alright then. And then I wished I hadn't really, he went on before me. Smashed the room up and I had to go on after that, and it was like, it's quite difficult.
It's quite funny, you didn't do much for a bit. You just
I didn't really know how to get, because basically all of Noel's jokes were still hanging in the air and I couldn't really get through them, so I just did some physical and nothing.
You
nothing.
Built a rudimentary net, didn't you, and netted them all down.
Yeah.
Like butterflies.
And then you started to gradually put my jokes in. To that space. That
your words had to go to the top of my words.
Yeah.
And they're almost the same size.
Yeah.
So his words were just slightly covering my words.
Stuff that was at the edge, I cut that off and
kept all those little edgelets in a bag. Yeah.
When we first met, we just wanted to write something for TV, I think, or film. So we weren't thinking about an audience, and then we started doing the live shows and they did really well.
But because we'd done stand-up, we just had a real natural rapport with the audience.
Yeah. So,
and almost got in the way, because people were going, but you're great in front of a crowd. But we were like, yeah, but it's in the zoo.
But also, like, the radio thing, it's great to sort of go in there and then feel that you're in it, and and you sort of just...
To not have someone go, oh,
yeah.
When you say anything, because we don't have, you know, punchlines are not that... We do have punchlines, but they're quite, you know... odd. So if you do a joke about yogurt, you don't really want someone going, oh, Some of the things are not really
meant
to be laughed
at. More like an ambient sort of comedy.
So when you put the laughter in, then it makes the line
seem... If it was a real laughter track for our stuff, it might be just like silence for ages, and then just some of those in the middle of it, and then someone might snort.
And then someone goes,
and then someone...
Usually my mum, you can hear on all the live shows.
But this radio show wasn't actually a Radio 4 show in the first place, was it?
It was for London Live.
For a local London radio station.
Yeah.
Who scheduled it at midday on a Saturday between the sport.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, is that
it's our natural home. We really
brilliant.
Fought for that slot, didn't we?
But they saw it and immediately knew it was laddie humour.
Yeah.
And they thought that talking envelopes and
that's early
wolves.
Afternoon.
Yeah, mod wolves would fit in perfectly with the rugby meathead and
sports sandwich.
But when you guys first came in to the BBC to record some stuff, we tried to do it in a studio first of all, and it just didn't work, did it?
No.
Why do you think that was?
Because we sort of are a bit more. Jazz or something, when we sort of record the words, you can't really go.
Sure, I'm going to stand by.
Is that a bit more? You have to kind of get a run into it and get the good stuff coming out, because we sort of improvise a bit in a structure. But if you just go, okay, action, you've got 4 minutes now to get this scene. We just sort of
you
really work like that.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a bit like wearing a big
crumble.
Baggy brown cardigan. It didn't quite fit. Yeah. We didn't know what was going on. We sort of tried to. We usually do stuff in the middle of the night as well, and we like to have our friends around. And we sort of, it's all a bit more organic, and that was all a bit come in here and
exactly
cold.
So what happened? Where did we move it?
We burnt the studio down and said we'd do it. Oh, we moved it to Shoreditch, didn't we?
Yes.
This little sort
friend of ours Joff
had what he laughingly described as a studio space.
It was basically the
hole.
I was slightly shocked when I came around to see it, to be honest.
It was like a medieval well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
archaeological dig.
It stank. It stank, first of all.
That's true.
It was an odd little brick room.
There were dogs roaming around.
Stinking cave.
It was a stand
next door. There were models on roller skates.
That was alright.
And it was called Studio 54, hilariously enough.
Is that right?
Number 54.
Oh, yeah, of course it was. But there were dogs walking around. And, you know.
On two legs.
But that's, you know, it's an unusual thing in what's supposed to be, you know, environment for recording sound.
Dogs and moccasins.
It is same as zoo, so that was how we got around that.
Yeah, and actually, people, if they listen to.
We didn't want to set it in a zoo, but the dogs kept barking.
It's a necessity.
Yeah. It's a good environment for us, actually, wasn't it?
Mm.
Those are sort of freaky people turning up.
Red's on there.
Yeah,
the dog. The
dog had a really long snout.
Red's dead.
No way, really. Oh, I didn't know that.
Tell me now, yeah, when we're recording. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Blimey. This is going to be a John Noakes moment where Danny starts falling. Red's gone.
Red's gone. He messed up so many takes.
Red had such a long snout. It's like a leg. His snout was so long. I don't know what kind of dog. That's probably why he died. His snout was too big.
Mm. He's an anteater.
We were giving him dog food.
Giving him out.
Rather than using an engineer or a technician or someone for nothing together, Julian, you foolishly agreed to take that on and to put the show together.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a decision you ever at any point at 4 a.m, say, when your eyes and your ears were bleeding, regretted?
I actually quite enjoyed the sort of, when you gradually sort of build it up and it becomes a world as opposed to sort of like just a series of quite bald, subtle sounding conversations, then you start putting that together. I enjoy that process, but occasionally, at night.
Let's be honest, you turn into the fly.
Yeah.
I'd come in and Julian would be on the ceiling, buzzing, like Jeff Goldblum.
Just eating donuts.
Just breaking down donuts.
I remember that it was like, well, it was at 2:00 to 3:00 in the morning one night, we were sitting there, and Julian was staring at the screen, playing the same jazz loop, it was a 2-second loop, over and over again. None of us said anything for an hour. You look like you're going to cry.
It just wouldn't end.
Yeah. I'm sure you could have given it to someone and they would have been able to do it, but you know, I did learn a lot and there's some mistakes, but there's stuff that you wouldn't perhaps have attempted that you just went, oh, may as well try and do this, and then
the stuff you try, where you
know how difficult it's going
to
be,
try to pull off is always the best in a weird way, because you go at it with a real blind naivety.
But it also worked because people could drop round, like Rich Fulcher
could come up the toilet system, the sewer system,
yeah, swimming from LA. How important was someone like Rich Fulcher to it?
Not very. It's basically a waste of time. He ate up all the budget just getting him there. We didn't make any money because we had to fly him in.
Well, that's the thing, isn't
he's
it?
Got a huge rider.
But he did, he came all the way.
Special foods he has to have, he's a nightmare. Mm.
But he did come all the way from LA just to be Bob Fosse.
We asked, we were very naive, we said, we need someone to be in it, they're from LA.
And
people, they said, you don't fly people in from LA to do a radio series for London Life.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. That was the thing.
But we did, and it was great. He's very integral to the show, so we sort of said, well, we can't do it without him.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the comic stylings of Bob Fosse.
Hey, everybody, great to see you. You're kind of an ugly audience, though. It looks like a few of you could use some rhinoplasty. You get it? Rhino? You know, like the animal, you baboon. All right, so listen, I was walking in front of this cheetah one day, and the cheetah was so fast, it wound up behind me.
What are you on about?
Now that stuff kills in the Bronx Zoo.
Mate, even the hyenas have stopped laughing.
All right, that does it. I don't have any of those verbal witty comebacks, but I do have this herd of wildebeest over here, and I got this starter pistol. Yeah? How do you like that? It's what I call a stampede comeback! Yeah! Listen good! You've been a great crowd! I'll be here all week!
And finally, is there any message to anyone listening?
To the Boche fans, keep it real and smell the vision.
I dedicate it to Red.
Red. To memory of Red.
Oh, yeah. Memory of Red.
The Red
the dog with the biggest snout in Europe.
Yeah.
Red. Red, the snout was long. It was like a baguette. I often used to dream of sawing the end off.
Julian and Nell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Danny Wallace.
Come with us now on a journey through time and space.
To the world of the mighty Boche.